welcome everybody to our new times. Good to see Angela back. She's been working night and day with her job driving a dump truck. She can probably tell you more about that. I just want to say a few words of what's on my mind with all that's been going on in Israel-Palestine the last almost 2 weeks now. You know, the thing it strikes me is that U.S. imperialism hasn't skipped a beat from Trump to Biden. You know, it was Trump that moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to East Jerusalem or to Jerusalem. And Biden has affirmed that decision. And then when this conflict broke out, Biden wouldn't publicly speak out against what the Israelis were doing to the Palestinians, not just in Gaza, but the evictions in East Jerusalem and the attack on Muslims going to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the third most holy mosque in Islam. And, basically said, you know, Israel right or wrong, that's the U.S. policy. And we do hear more dissent than we have in the past from, you know, progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Not that many people, but some prominent people. Didn't make any difference because politically they have no leverage. They have nowhere to go. You know, if they don't like what the Democrats are doing, what are they going to do? Support the Republicans? They're complicit in the smashing of the independent left. You know, ballot access and continuing this winner-take-all electoral system where the winner gets all the representation and everybody else gets nothing. So, and it's not just Israel-Palestine. The Colombian protest movement against austerity and now police brutality and killings is entering its fourth week with new initiatives coming from the National Strike Committee. And then there's Haiti, where the dictator won't step down and Biden's back in the dictator. So nothing's really changed. And, you know, I'm kind of irritated that when I hear Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, give Biden a grade of A, I wonder, well, with progressives like that, who needs neoliberal imperialists like Biden? I mean, I know they're kind of giddy because Biden has made some gestures on infrastructure and on this American Families Plan and some supports for families. But you break it down what he's doing, it's still austerity. I keep thinking of the paid leave. In his plan, it'll take 10 years to get to 12 weeks paid leave. You know, most European countries have up to a year, in Scandinavia even more. And we're about the last rich country. We are the last rich country not to have paid leave. So people are getting all excited, but when you compare it to an objective standard, it's still neoliberal austerity at home and imperialism abroad. So I think, you know, the task, I think for us is to fight for democracy. We need democracy reforms. Take ballot access in response to, in this case, libertarians. You know, the Republicans are saying the libertarians spoiled the election for Trump. At least some of them are. So Arkansas, for example, raised the ballot petition requirement. And Greens now in Arkansas are scrambling to get their petition in before that higher standard takes effect. And then here in New York, it was the Democrats last year who tripled the number of votes we need to stay on the ballot, doubled the frequency we need to get them. And then if we lose the ballot, we need to get 45,000 signatures in 5 weeks to get back on the ballot, which makes it about the highest, hardest standard in the country. And this is the home to the Democratic Socialists who work inside the Democratic Party. They've been totally silent on this thing. And I don't think they realize, most of them, that without a strong independent left, they got no leverage inside the Democratic Party. You know, people are demonstrating all over the country right now in support of the Palestinians. You think Biden cares? They don't. It's, you know, people will demonstrate to go home, and Biden knows most of those people are going to vote for him instead of whatever the right-wing Republican comes up in 4 years. So we've really got to fight for really federal legislation to have a fair ballot access standard for all federal elections. John Conyers used to have a bill in the late 80s and up to the late 90s. And it would be a fraction of what we now have to get on the ballot. And you got to realize this country is off the charts and how hard it is to get on a ballot. You want to run as an independent or a new party candidate? In most states, it's thousands or tens of thousands of signatures. In my state, it's 3,500. You got to get in that 5-week window. In Florida, it's over 10,000. Illinois, it's over 15,000. Georgia, over 20,000. Alabama, over 30,000. Indiana, over 40,000. You want to run as an independent for the House of Commons in the United Kingdom? 10 signatures. You want to run for Parliament as independent in New Zealand? 2 signatures. Australia, it's 50. Canada, it's 100. Unless you're in one of those northern, really rural districts, it's 50. And here it's thousands or tens of thousands. So, you know, the U.S. likes to say they're the leader of democracy. They're not. They don't allow choices. And the other problem is winner-take-all elections. Single-member district plurality winner. So whoever gets the plurality gets all the power. And everybody else gets none. Whether you're green, libertarian, a Democrat in a Republican district, or a Republican in a Democratic district, you get no representation in your district. 95% of state legislative and congressional races are not competitive because they gerrymander the seats. So they're safe. So the politicians pick their voters, not the voters picking the politicians. And these politicians inherit their seats. They don't earn them. So there's nothing democratic about this. This is why I've been pushing ranked choice voting, where you get rid of the spoiler problem in single seat races, like for president, but even more importantly for legislative bodies. Ranked choice voting for multi-member districts gives you proportional representation. So if the Greens are a 10% party, we get 10% of the seats. If we're a 20% party, we get 20% of the seats, not zero. And that's, I think, the thing we got to fight for, because, you know, what Andrew and I ran into was most progressives were scared to hell of Donald Trump. So they said, vote for Joe Biden, hold your nose and vote for Biden. In fact, a bunch of prominent public intellectuals made a statement there in the fall saying, dump Trump, then battle Biden. Well, I'm waiting for the battle Biden part. When does that start? You know, these people are mostly cheerleading Biden as he does the things I just described. So I got that off my chest. How are you doing, Angela?
It needed to be said, and I'm glad that you said it, especially when we're talking about what's happening to Palestine. And
can you turn up the volume? You're low on the volume.
How about now?
Yeah, that's good.
My Ethernet cable. So if things aren't coming through the way that they need to, my Ethernet cable, Possum decided it was a chewable. And so quietly sat there and chewed it, which is why the puppy gate is up. They are on the other side of the puppy gate. So they won't be in y'all's faces right now because no, I don't even know if this cable works anymore. But yeah, just thinking about battle Biden. I don't see any battling. I see cheerleading, just like you said. So first off, hey y'all, missed you. I missed you. I did. This is, you know, my work days are averaging, my short days are 10 and a half hours. So, and there's been a 17 hour in there. So yeah, I'm tired, but I have been thinking about y'all. And thinking about the fact that, you know, in news here in South Carolina, hi, Diana and Gata, and Miss Leo and Lucre, the announcer, and Amy and everybody, and Nikita, good to see you. The fact that this year, or this fiscal year for South Carolina, marks the most ambitious spending on paving infrastructure that they have ever had. They're calling it historic, what they're spending on paving. So a lot of places here in South Carolina where the roads are not up to par, y'all gonna be getting resurfaced. A lot of dirt roads, they won't be dirt anymore. So that's what I'm doing. That's job security. That's what I do. And just thinking about today, you know, the news came down that comedian Paul Mooney, those of you who know him, old school black cat, he transitioned today. So, you know, may the ancestors welcome him. And, you know, thank you for bringing the fire for all of these years, because he didn't pull no punches with nobody. And yeah, so I'm glad to be back. I have missed y'all. I'll be here when I can. They've been working us to death during the weekdays, so Saturdays being off is, you know, kind of a given, since I think I've got maybe 10 hours I could work today, but that's it. So, that's all I got. Hey, Ken. Good to see you. Red 8 hour days are too much. I agree. And this whole thing with like shortening the work week, I'm here for that. And got no time to rest and organize. That's how capitalism works. You know what it is. Thank you, Amy. Yeah, I would love to say Nikita was a dear friend of mine. Howie knew her much better than I did, but I was a massive fangirl of her work. And those of you who have not, if you are, you know, podcast folks, Queer Walk Podcast, you want to tune in, because she brought so much knowledge, a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of information that she shared on that podcast with folks about socialism, about organizing, about labor history, about, you know, things that happened in the Black liberation movement, LGBTQIA fight for equality. So all of those things are in there. So if you are not someone who has, you know, followed the Queer Walk, WOC, Queer Walk podcast, you want to, and just send massive love to her co-host, Dr. Money. Yeah, and I'd encourage all y'all to truck on over to the site where Queer Walk is, and just kind of check things out.
Yeah, Nikita was, we have a huge hole in the movement here in Syracuse. You can go back to a live stream that Angela and I did in December with Nikita, where we talked about organizing. And the thing that might strike you is that, you know, she was a millwright and she's working with a bunch of upstate rural Trumpies, and she's trying to persuade them. And she was an organizer. She realized that, you know, we need to organize the many to defeat the few. And so she's talking to them. Meanwhile, in the Black Lives Matter organization and movement in Syracuse, she was the person everybody looked to. She was the glue. And it wasn't like she was out front. She was encouraging other people to speak. And as I have said, she was my favorite person to talk to about organizing and social theory, because she actually read a bunch of books that I had read that I had nobody to talk to about here, like Robert L. Allen's Black Awakening in Capitalist America. That's from the late 60s and kind of shows where the nonprofit industrial complex came from when the Ford Foundation tried to co-opt the Black Power movement. And then another book, Mike Davis's Prisoners of the American Dream, which is a history of the economics and politics of the working class, and basically explains why we don't have an independent left in this country. So I miss her as much for those conversations as what she was contributing to the movement. And I'm really still in shock. I feel like, you know, she's gonna come walking in the door here in the green storefront and we'll just, you know, take up where we left off. It's just hard to believe she's gone.
Hey, Kenneth, I saw this in the chat earlier. We should work with libertarians and other third parties to get proportional representation and other reforms.
Yeah, I'm actually working on that. In fact, the other night I called Larry Sharp, who was my gubernatorial rival for governor of New York in 2018, to get on the advisory council to the Ranked Choice New York campaign, and he agreed. And then I called Cornel West, who's on the advisory committee of the Movement for a People's Party, to get him on board on this Ranked Choice New York advisory board, and he agreed. So yes, we got to do that, because all of us, and when I say all of us, it's not just the third parties. If you're a Democrat in a Republican district or Republican in a Democratic district, you don't have representation either. And that's why we all got to work for proportional representation. We can build that coalition. And one of the things, I've got a long article that I've, hopefully Jacobin will run it. It's twice as long as they normally have on this question. It's called Escaping the Left's Electoral Impasse, about ranked choice voting and proportional representation. I haven't submitted it yet. It's ready to go. I'll probably do it Monday. But the thing that I learned as I was doing the research is that where we've got proportional representation in this new wave of ranked choice voting since 2000, there are five of about now 50 places where they're using ranked choice voting. And five of them do proportional ranked choice voting. In other words, single transferable vote for multi-member districts for city councils and school boards. Three of those five were on the basis of civil rights action. It was Black folks in East Point, Michigan, Mexican Americans in Desert Palm, California, and Asian Americans in Albany, California, who were excluded by this winner-take-all system and either filed lawsuits like they did in East Point, or threatened to like they did in the other places, and forced those municipalities to go to proportional ranked choice voting, which not only includes political minorities, and it gives ethnic minorities their fair share of representation and power. And I think that's an angle that, I mean, I've been talking with people here in New York. We have a lot of institutionalized racism in the winner-take-all system, where, you know, Black folks might be 25% or Latinos or combined, and they got no representation in their municipal and county governments, particularly county governments. So there's civil rights grounds to push for this legally, as well as political grounds to try to move it through your cities, towns, and counties, and eventually states and the federal government. So Z. Kramer asks, should the government use eminent domain to get land needed to build public transit? It should, and it does. It should be a fair process. Eminent domain done properly is, if it's found that the private property is needed for a public purpose, the private owners are supposed to be justly compensated. But yeah, that is something that, if we didn't have eminent domain, we'd have very little infrastructure. On the other hand, we have to be careful, because some of these developers, private developers, get the government to do eminent domain on behalf of their private developments, which is unfair to the people who already have the property, and is not what eminent domain was put in our Constitution for. So we should use it, but use it properly.
And I this makes me also think of, there is a fight for, there are tenants that are organizing, and don't misquote me on this, I got to find the article, pushing to use eminent domain to get the right to own where they live, to keep, you know, developers from taking their money or taking their properties from them. I have to pull that up, that article, but using eminent domain on behalf of the people. But like Howie said, and I saw this when I lived in Jacksonville, the first place that I've ever seen it was used in Jacksonville, Florida, where they moved folks. They decided they wanted land downtown. Well, people were still living on it. And they literally, you know, eminent domain to me means snatching the rug, literally snatching the rug out from under people, taking their land, displacing them, taking their homes, and Yeah, so.
Yeah, I would add an improper use of eminent domain is what Trump started and Biden continued. And that is to take land on the border with Mexico away from their owners so they can build the wall. And although Biden has said there's a moratorium on wall building, his Justice Department is continuing those eminent domain proceedings. So keep an eye on that.
Hey, Amy. Hey, sweetie. Howie and or Angela, is there an update regarding the turf faction in the Georgia Green Party?
Well, there's a lot of people upset. They adopted a resolution that basically said, they call it sex-based rights, so that the only way you can base the rights of women is on their biological sex, which is basically saying trans people don't get protected. So they're opposed to the Equality Act, which has passed the House and is pending in the Senate. Won't pass unless the Democrats get rid of the filibuster. That's another story. The Lavender Caucus, the LGBTQ caucus of the Green Party, has gone to the accreditation committee and said the Georgia Party should be disaccredited for that bigoted position they've taken. And so that's being debated on the national committee, the accreditation committee. I'm not exactly sure where it is in their process, but they, I guess, will be bringing something forward soon to the national committee. And it's been very disruptive. I mean, I look at this and you read some of the statements people that have come into the Green Party, some from the Democratic Party, and basically they saw the Green Party as easy pickings to advance their anti-trans agenda when they ought to be in the Republican Party, because that's where it really is. So that's about all I can tell you. But the Georgia Party, to the extent it is a party, it's a small group, has not changed their position. But most of the Greens oppose them, so it's just a big sideshow. Hopefully we'll get it behind us soon.
Amy Swank, hey, sweetheart. What do you think of the PRO Act?
Yeah, the PRO Act stands for Protecting Our Right to Organize. It includes the card check union recognition that Obama twice promised and then didn't do anything about, has other protections for organizing. It should pass. I think it's passed the House and is pending in the Senate. But like all this other legislation, except for the American Families Plan and American Jobs Plan, which can be done by budget reconciliation, so presumably you can get the 50 senators and the vice president to pass those through. This is going nowhere as long as the filibuster is in place. And I don't know why these progressive Democrats aren't outraged and up in arms and raising a big stink about the filibuster, because they're going to get nothing if that isn't removed. Because the Republicans, you know, their whole objective is to obstruct whatever the Democrats and Biden want to do. So it's really the Democrats negotiating with themselves on all of this legislation. But they're keeping the filibuster, I think, at least for some of them, so they can blame the Republicans for it not passing. But if they don't, you know, deliver some results, Republicans are going to come out, you know, back and say, this is a do-nothing Congress, put us back in charge, which will be persuasive to some people. So the PRO Act is good legislation. It's not all we need to revitalize the labor movement, but it will help. And it should pass. But until they get rid of the filibuster, it's not going anywhere.
Hey, Keck. Keck from Kekistan is wondering, I wonder what Howie Hawkins feels about the land value tax.
I feel good about it. I support it. I mean, the basic idea is that the unearned increment from the rise in land values, when you own a piece of land, should go to the public treasury, not to your private pocket. Because when land values increase, it's not because usually only what you did, it's what was done around you. So if you're on a piece of land and then they put a transit line near it, the value goes up. or you're in a neighborhood that's gentrifying and there's investment, the value goes up, not because of anything you did, because of what society did. And that's unearned income. As John Stuart Mill, I think, was the one that just said, you make money while you're asleep. And, you know, people should make money they earn, but money they get for free for not doing anything because of what's going on in society should be, that money should go into the public treasury for public needs. And so I think it's part of any progressive tax reform program. It has other advantages because you just can't sit on a piece of land as the value goes up without paying that land value tax. It tends to require or encourage investment in areas that are already developed, like inner cities that need investment, and discourage investment in what they call greenfields, you know, building a new subdivision on former farmland. So it has other advantages in terms of city planning and developing cities that are resource and energy efficient and therefore more sustainable. So there's a lot to say for it. And, you know, it should be something the Greens talk more about and bring up more in their, particularly their local campaigns, because it can be instituted at the local level, has been instituted. Pennsylvania did it, several cities, Pittsburgh. It's credited with helping Pittsburgh do some of its comeback from when the steel mills closed. Their countries, I think Singapore uses it, and they, you know, use it for public infrastructure. So I think it's a good idea.
Hey, Eric. Hey, sweetheart. Eric Gray is asking, as a teacher myself, what is considered a bad school? What advice do you have for educators and students moving forward through the pandemic and post-pandemic? I think a lot of what I'm seeing, a lot of emphasis is being put on, I think a lot of people are really excited about the fact that folks can be, Dita, stop it, be vac-, my dogs, get over there, be vaccinated. And I think that, you know, that matters, but I also hope that going forward, you know, the precautions that we had been using during the worst parts of this pandemic, you know, pre vaccine availability, I hope we're still going to do that. I hope that schools are going to make allowances for the damage that, you know, has been exposed and the conditions that people changed conditions that people are navigating during this pandemic. I'm hoping those things happen. If I were to give advice for educators and students personally, I just need y'all to stay safe. I need y'all to stay safe. I understand the CDC is issuing different things about what folks should do. Wear a mask, wash your hands, keep social distancing, you know, things that are frequently touched, let's keep those wiped down. I just need people to, I really am concerned about what we're dealing with, you know, what has been unearthed with this pandemic and the disparities in the educational system that have, that people were able to ignore before, and they can't. And with folks trying to navigate, you know, being able to go back to school or wanting to go back to school and educators doing their work, I just need y'all overall to keep up the precautions that kept folks healthy through the worst parts of the pandemic. Howie, what do you think?
Well, what they call quote unquote bad schools are schools that are underfunded in communities with concentrated poverty. And then they, you know, have them go through these standardized tests, and these students tend to score lower. Then they say the school is bad. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then they use those tests to push privatization, also known as charter schools. Mm-hmm. Charter schools say, oh, we're public. No, they're not. Is Lockheed Martin a state-owned enterprise? No, they get all their money from the government, from the Pentagon, but that doesn't mean they're publicly controlled. Same thing with these charter schools. And what we're seeing coming out of the pandemic, and there were news reports this week by lazy journalists who said that parents who had to do homeschooling and online teaching were now wanting to go to charter schools. There's no evidence for that. This is a line pushed by the school privatization movement, the charter school movement, who had a secretary of education in Betsy DeVos and now has a bunch of their people in Biden's Department of Education. Not the top person, but they're infiltrated everywhere, and they're pushing this. The Biden Education Department said, we're going to go ahead with the standardized tests. We're not going to use them to determine whether schools are flunking or not. We're just going to use them to measure where people are at. But they'll use those scores to say they're bad schools that have to be closed and then push the money towards the charter schools. Most of the legislation to privatize is at the state level now. So advice I have is fight the privatization. Fight for full funding of your schools, of public schools that are publicly controlled. We got to get rid of this state takeover and mayoral control, because that's a business model. You know, that's what Mike Bloomberg got in New York. New York had 32 community school boards. They were elected by proportional ranked choice voting, 9-member boards, which meant any political viewpoint with 10% got a seat on the community school board. And that, because of that, Dominicans, South Asians, East Asians got their first people elected to any public office in New York history. The state legislature wanted to put those elections back on the lever machines we had. See, this went on from 1969 to 2002, these community school boards. And the legislature got the bright idea that we'll put the school board elections on the lever machines instead of these paper ballots they were using for proportional ranked choice voting. The Department of Justice, because that was when we still had Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, the pre-clearance provision for jurisdictions with a history of racial discrimination, which included the Bronx, Brooklyn, and parts of Manhattan. And the Justice Department didn't approve that law, so it didn't pass. So then along comes Mike Bloomberg, and he says, we got to run the schools like a business, a top-down business model. And you know who benefited from that? The charter school industry. Because it was Bloomberg and, you know, these people that were pushing it nationwide. Even got Al Sharpton roped in because he owed a bunch of money to the FEC, and one of them charter rich people, you know, paid that off if he would go out with, who was it, Klein, the guy who was head of the schools under Bloomberg, and promote charters around the country. This is a huge racket. There's $600 billion in the public school system. Yep. And because capitalism is in crisis, crisis of overproduction, you can't make investments in the real economy. There are limited opportunities to invest things, actually make goods and services. So they do a couple things. They financialize, they make people in debt, and they go after public streams of money like the schools. So this is a big ripoff scheme. So I think, you know, going forward, get the schools funded. If you don't have an elected school board, fight to get it back and fight this privatization. Because if they privatize schools, the people that got money will get educated and the people that don't won't.
Ask New Orleans about that. Ask Milwaukee about it.
Right.
Hey, Justin, do you think it's a good strategy, and how often does GPS cross officially endorse bills in the U.S. Congress? I'm thinking of bills such as H.R. 1976, the Medicare for All Act, or H.R. 2590, defending the human rights of Palestinian children and families living under Israeli military occupation act, which the Green Party of Connecticut just voted to endorse in our annual meeting today.
Yeah, I think it's a good strategy when it's a good bill. The Medicare for All bill you're referring to is not as good as the one we had, H.R. 676. So I think, you know, critical endorsement would be appropriate there. But yeah, if there's good legislation, hell, I was endorsing a bill that Ilhan Omar introduced called the Cancel Rent and Mortgage Act, which just didn't cancel it for people that were behind, but had the federal government pay it so that the, you know, the banks, the landlords, all the businesses depend on property management could stay in business and they didn't eat all the losses. I thought that was a good bill. And of course, you know, when I was running for the Green nomination, some of my opponents said, you're endorsing the Democrats. No, I was endorsing a bill. In fact, somebody said I was endorsing Ilhan Omar for re-election. You know, that's not my district. That's their business. I was endorsing the bill because it was good. I think, yeah, if it's good, we should endorse it, whoever brings it forward.
Hey, Lucred announcer. Hey, Boo. What would you say to those who are worried that vaccines are dangerous because they've been approved through emergency use authorization?
I would say get your damn vaccination. You know, we've had millions vaccinated, very few adverse effects, and it's reducing the amount of people getting sick and going to the hospital. The bigger problem is getting those vaccines around the world and getting them around the world before we get new variants, like maybe this variant, which is devastating India, come back to bite us because the world isn't vaccinated and there's populations in which these new variants can develop. And so I think, you know, we've got the evidence that they are safe. I think, you know, we should always look at how they're approved. I remember when Ford pushed through the swine flu vaccinations in the 1970s, and a number of people got some very serious illnesses. I think it was a nervous disorder. And it turned out the swine flu never got here. It was pushed through for political reasons. And I think, you know, with Trump in the White House, that was something to keep an eye on. But I think, you know, now that we're, now we got the hindsight, it's the vaccines are safe. Get your damn vaccination. That's my opinion.
NFR! Hey, Boo. Tell Gabrielle I said hey. Well, we say hey. Howie and Angela, I am concerned about whether we have the time left to scale back the course of climate change.
Well, we should have been doing what we need to do now 20 years ago. There's already damage in the pipeline, but it's not hopeless. I think the big challenge for those of us who are eco-socialists is we've got to educate the climate movement that the kind of programs they're advocating, they're basically advocating scaling up the token program that Biden put forward. You know, the progressive Democrats, a whole coalition of big nonprofits is pushing the Thrive Agenda. Let's spend $10 trillion over 10 years instead of $2.25 trillion over 8 years, which was Biden's proposal. Of course, Biden's proposal is a reduction from what he campaigned on, $2 trillion over 4 years. And then this week, he offered the Republicans, well, we'll scale it back to $1.7 trillion from $2.25 trillion. And actually, you know, you can go on the Solidarity website, Solidarity Webzine, and I have a 9,500-word article that breaks down what Biden proposed, section by section in the economy, and all the problems with it, from the fiscal conservative pay-as-you-go proposal. He just decided he could spend as much as he could get in tax increases from raising the corporate tax rate a little bit, instead of figuring out what we need and then figure out how to pay for it and borrow the money now to make those investments now. So the problem with this Thrive Agenda, like the Biden Agenda, it's kind of a Keynesian version of trickle-down economics. So the old trickle-down supply-side economics we got from, you know, the Reagans and the Trumps is give the rich folks money, they'll invest and we'll get jobs and whatnot, which doesn't happen. The Keynesian version is we're going to provide tax incentives and subsidies to corporations to do things we want, like invest in renewable energy, charging stations and so forth. The problem there is we're still relying on the corporate sector and market incentives. And like I outlined briefly, this crisis of overproduction means if you can't make money from investments in the real economy, you're going to take that money and put it into the stock market, stock buybacks, trillions of dollars of stock buybacks over the last decade with all this money that the Federal Reserve and the tax breaks gave to the rich. And that's what they're doing. We need an eco-socialist Green New Deal, not a Keynesian Green New Deal. We need to have public enterprise and planning that lays out and has goals, timelines, and directly produces and employs people to do it, to do what we need to do, whether it's mass transit, solar and wind power, public housing that's energy efficient and can be integrated with the transit system to create walkable communities. All these things we talked about in our eco-socialist Green New Deal, you need to run that through the public sector. And that's where I think we have an argument with the climate movement, which won't take on capitalism. You talk to these folks privately, yeah, capitalism is a system of endless growth, and we can't have a sustainable society under capitalism, but they won't talk about it. And then when they get to what they're advocating Congress to do, the Thrive Agenda, it's basically Keynesian stimulus of capitalist corporations. That won't get the job done. That's why we need an independent, radical, eco-socialist left that's organized and can educate around this question, as well as not be co-opted like the progressive Democrats are, where they can posture inside the Democratic Party and Pelosi and Biden and Schumer can say, thank you very much. Thanks for sheepdogging these progressives into the Democratic Party to vote for us. But we ain't doing what you say.
Hey, Blind Boy Wilson. Hey, boo. Who do you endorse for New York City mayor?
Well, they're all Democrats and Republicans. There's not a Green candidate. So I'm not going to endorse anybody. But I've observed it. And it looks like the two most conservative candidates are in the lead. Andrew Yang and Adams from Brooklyn, borough president, former cop. And the progressives, Maya Wiley, Diane Morales, are trailing. There are eight major candidates. And in the polls, none of them are breaking 20%. I think Yang got to 21% once and Eric Adams got to 21% once. What I'm endorsing is the fact that they're using ranked choice voting to sort this out. Before, it would have been a runoff. You could have had two candidates in the high teens running against each other when neither of them was the most preferred if you had found out through ranked choice voting, which is what they're going to do. That's good. The problem with the ranked choice vote in New York City, it's for Democrats only. The Charter Commission that recommended this said it's only for primaries and special elections, not for the general election, where the Greens might compete without the spoiler problem for mayor. And if it was proportional RCV for the council, like the New York had from 1937 to 1945, Greens would certainly get members elected to the council. But they didn't want the competition. They just wanted to rationalize their own competition within the party. So this is a very partisan piece of legislation. It's not surprising. 14 of the 15 people on the Charter Commission were appointed by Democratic politicians. One token Republican got to appoint a Republican. 41 of 51 city councilors in New York City are Democrats. Every single citywide elected official is a Democrat. So they were looking out for themselves. But it's a lot better. They will get the most preferred Democratic candidate because of ranked choice voting. And that's a good thing. It's just a shame that the Democrats kept it to themselves in New York City. And it's a shame that the so-called democratic socialists who are being elected to the state senate, state assembly, city council in New York City are silent on this. You know, that's got me more outraged than anything. Where's their sense of democracy and their strategic sense? Because without an independent left, their leverage inside the Democratic Party is zilch. We saw that this week. New York has had a single payer health bill that the assembly passed every year from 1993 to 2017. And they said, well, we can't get it passed in the Senate because it's majority Republican. Well, in 2018, the Democrats got the majority in the state Senate. Now the assembly won't even pass it again. The pharmaceutical companies, the hospital lobbyists, the private insurance companies are pouring money into the Democratic coffers. So this week, the health committee and the Senate side, they reported out the bills related to health they're going to consider this year. The single payer bill wasn't there. So now, once again, the Democrats say they're for single payer, a Medicare for all type system, when they can't do it because the Republicans can block them. When they get both houses and the governorship, suddenly they got problems. We saw that in Hawaii. We saw it in California. We saw it in Vermont. And we just saw it again in New York. Now, these Democrats, these so-called progressive and socialist Democrats, don't they understand that that's going to keep happening until there's an independent left with enough strength that the mainstream Democrats have to move our way, because otherwise they're going to lose votes to that independent left. But I think, you know, the socialist Democrats, the progressive Democrats, they're careerists. They don't want to get in trouble with the leadership. So they're not talking about opening up the political process in New York.
Hey, Zeke. Hey, sweetie. Been a minute. What is your opinion on the INFORM Act?
I need to be informed as to what the INFORM Act is.
It is my understanding that the INFORM Act is something that's going to require online marketplaces to disclose certain verified information regarding like high volume third party sellers of consumer products to inform consumers. Fulfillment or shipment by different party other than seller. I would like to act like I know more about this than I do, but I don't, and I ain't a liar, so.
Well, the way you describe it, Angela, sounds like something Ralph Nader would propose, consumer protection and, if you know, transparency. So it sounds good. I mean, I'll have to find out more about it.
Hey, Lucre Denouncer. Should more states convert to unicameral legislatures like Nebraska did? Should their houses or their senates be abolished?
I would favor that. It's not on the top of the agenda. Actually, Mario Cuomo in New York proposed that at one time because the Republican Senate was obstructing his legislative agenda. It didn't go anywhere. But I think you should have one popular legislative assembly elected by proportional representation. And I'd even go further. It should be like a parliamentary system where you form a coalition in the legislature and appoint the executive officers to execute what the legislature proposes, as opposed to having independently elected executive officers, particularly positions like president and governor, because you can have divided government and then you got gridlock and you don't get stuff done. But I think that's worth discussion. Although my priority now is fair ballot access and ranked choice voting for proportional representation. I think we open it up, then we can talk about reforms like this. And, you know, the Nebraska legislature is nonpartisan. I don't agree with that, because nonpartisan is just not truth in advertising, like the INFORM Act apparently tries to deal with. Because behind those nonpartisans are the partisans. Where they have nonpartisan elections, you usually have the party machines putting their people forward, and the nonpartisan office is a step toward partisan office at the state or federal level.
This is not a troll question. Hey, Naru Mongo 22. This is not a troll question. What is the Green Party's stance on Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies? I think they are a technology that can return economic and financial power to individuals rather than banks. It's my understanding the Green Party itself has no position on Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. What do you think?
Well, I think money should be a public utility issued by the government, not private banks. And yeah, you can have these cryptocurrencies that the banks don't control, but individuals do, often wealthy individuals, and they're beyond public regulation. And that's why a lot of criminal activity and tax evasion goes on through cryptocurrencies. So I'm not a fan of them. I think we need a new monetary system where money is a public utility, not something that is issued by private banks as credit.
Andy Fung. Hey, hi. Hey, Andy. What's your opinion on current cap and trade systems? I believe there are two notable ones in the U.S., one in the West Coast and one in New England.
I think a carbon tax is good because you have a fixed price that escalates. The problem with cap and trade systems is the price fluctuates. So the incentives for people to move to renewables off of carbon they're hard to project. There's too much uncertainty. And we often see these markets collapse. We saw that last April with the carbon market they have in Europe, like we did at the time of the Great Recession. So it's not been effective in providing those market incentives that it's supposed to. And here in New England, that includes New York, it's called REGI, Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And I don't know about other states, but New York has taken the revenues that were supposed to go and be invested in renewables and used it to close all kinds of budget gaps or spend it on special projects. So I don't think it's worked in New England and or in the Northeast. And I think New Jersey's part of it, too. And, you know, we still are burning frack gas in our power plants. We're subsidizing nuclear power. Wind and solar are gaining because they're cheaper than any of the source now. But we're not making the transition fast enough. So I don't think cap and trade has worked. That goes back to Kyoto when the U.S. pushed hard. Because what you're doing, you're trying to offset. You let the polluters emit, and then they buy the right to pollute. You're privatizing the air. It's not effective. It hasn't worked. A carbon tax should be part of a climate action policy. But more than that, we need a eco-socialist approach where through the public sector, we build what we need and employ the people to build it.
Hey, a voice in the wilderness. How you doing? Any thoughts on the Syracuse mayoral race? God, a smile.
Yeah, that's for me. First of all, it's not very visible. There's a Democratic primary going on, and then that person will run against the heir to the Republican dynasty, the Walsh family, who's been an independent. He's kind of a technocratic liberal, social liberal, fiscal conservative. He got elected because the Democratic Party split 4 years ago. Democratic Party has a kind of policy wonkish counselor at large and another candidate that I don't know what the hell he stands for. His sign says man up. And he's counting on the black community. I don't think they're going to go for him. He's the guy I got 48% against running for the district council here. But given the city's, you know, this city is one of the most poor Rust Belt cities in the country. And I don't see a program from any of these people that addresses the issue. Unaffordable housing, abandoned homes, an infrastructure that's falling apart. We have basically a water main or sewer main collapse one a day on average. Right downtown, some of these lines are the lines are wood or they're brick. They were built 150 years ago, and we've just been patching them up for decades. There is no idea that we need to budget our needs and then demand that the state and federal government help meet them. I'll see who's on the ballot in November, and because the Greens aren't running, probably vote for the lesser evil or leave it blank. But I ran 4 years ago. I laid out a comprehensive program, got a good response from a lot of people, but it was one of those things, well, you can't win, Howie, so we're going to pick the lesser evil. And yeah, the Democratic Party was split. It was a really weird dynamic because the Democratic nominee, who was Mexican-American, had pissed off the black Democrats who were getting money from the city when she had been the city lawyer. So it was very personal. Mm. And that enabled this guy who ran as an independent but is the son of the former congressman and the grandson of the former congressman and mayor. The mayor who put an interstate highway through the black community. If you look at The Guardian, I think the story was today, it was recently, you'll see a discussion of that. The whole black community was dispersed. And so now you got a big divide between this south side where I'm at, black community, and Syracuse University. And a lot of, you know, environmental racism in that, you know, the diesel fumes and the dust and the asthma and lung disease it causes on, you know, on the south side. The disinvestment. Now, that highway built has to come down because it's outlived its lifespan. It's falling apart. So now the question is, are they going to rebuild it bigger or are they going to put a tunnel under the city? That's not going to happen. Or are they going to reroute the through traffic outside the city and put a boulevard and a community grid where that old 15th ward that got torn up was? And those of us in the community have been advocating that community grid. In fact, if you look at the, you know, behind me, I mean, I was campaigning on this for mayor in 2005, and we were advocating that. And so we've kind of won that over the years, although it's still a question of who's going to do the planning. The developers, a lot of that land is public. Who's going to get control of it? There's a whole lot of issues there. And again, I'm not seeing the mayoral candidates talk about it. Our media locally is devastated. There's hardly any coverage of this stuff. And the candidates, I mean, I haven't seen them out here. I just see the yard signs. So the Democrats will have a primary in June, and then the winner of that will face off against the incumbent former. He never was a Republican. He ran as an independent. I think he saw the writing on the wall. This city, when Greens do run, we come in second. Republicans come in third. So this is very few Republicans left here. So anyway, long answer to a short question. A voice in the wilderness. I bet you live in Syracuse or nearby.
Hey, Zeke. What do you think of the AP reporter, Associated Press reporter, who was fired for her support of Palestine? That's bogus.
Yeah, I don't know that story. I do think it's terrible that the Israelis blew up the building in which the AP and Al Jazeera were located on the excuse that Hamas was in there too. I know the AP, the AP person who ran that office said, we never saw him here, and we kept our eye out because, you know, we don't want to be a target. So that, I think, is wrong. Now, it is true that these news agencies do have biases, and if people don't conform to it, they will get fired. But I don't know this story.
All I think we're about to get the cane too. So what are your thoughts?
The cane, that's like the hook in
Apollo with the Apollo. Sandman come tap dancing on and yeah.
Well, the time went fast.
It did.
I had time to gather a final thought. I was, glad, first of all, that you're back on. So I have to do this all by myself. And everybody asking, where's Angela? So it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
And I don't know, we've just got to build a left. This country is, okay, here's a thought. When we were running, our ticket, we were for Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, deep cuts in military spending and putting the savings into social and environmental protections, student debt relief. And I could go on and on. You poll where the people stand on that, those issues, they were with us. Biden and Trump were opposed. If people voted for what they want, they'd have voted us. I mean, we'd now be dealing with these problems in the White House. But, of course, we were blanked out in the media, and we have an electoral system that incentivizes progressives to vote for centrist, corporate, neoliberal, imperialist Democrats. I mean, I can't stomach that, but that's what people do. But it is understandable because the Republicans are not just a conservative party these days. They're an extremist party.
Yes.
They are openly racist, openly nativist. They monger conspiracies about COVID and climate and who won the last election. And in the fringe of them, like that crazy woman from Georgia that said,
"Ooh, Lord,"
it was a Jewish satellite that was firing, lasers to start forest fires in the Western. Some crazy stuff. I mean,
Lord.
Where do they find these people?
Man.
I mean, we just had a president that in a nationally televised news conference says to a doctor, "How about people inject themselves with disinfectant?
Whew.
Or put ultraviolet light? Won't that kill the COVID?" I mean, how do you get a guy like that in the presidency? And where is, Ralph Nader always says, we got to raise our expectations.
Whew.
Get the fire in our belly, because this is outrageous. And the problems we're facing with the climate, poverty, racism, this new nuclear arms race, and problems of peace all over the world. These people we got ain't solving them. And so I guess I'm just encouraging people to, buckle down, do what you can every day about this stuff, and get organized. We can't do it all, on social media. We got to have real organizations in our communities, talking to each other, educating ourselves, making ourselves smarter. And then, not settling for less than we deserve.
How do I follow that? You're absolutely right. And I was actually, I want to shout out a good friend of, our campaign, Jason Miles and Pascal Robert. They do a podcast called This Is Revolution. And today their guest was Shama Sawant, who brought the fire. So, and just talking about, it's going to take people. This is working class folks, cash poor folks. We have the most to lose. And we are the ones that are being the most harmed by the inaction of people who are in political power. We're the ones that are bearing the brunt of all of this stuff. And it is not going to get fixed until we fix it. It's on us. And that's a lot, especially when you work long hours. Today was the first day in a week that I have not had to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get ready for work. I am zoned right now. So all I can say is, how everything Howie said is exactly right. And we do have to get organized. We have to keep pushing, as exhausting as that is, on top of everything else. So to be able to do that work, I need y'all to stay healthy. I need you to keep yourselves hydrated. That's how he's drinking water. I need y'all to, you know, warmer weather is coming up. Definitely stay hydrated. I need you to, you know, find things that bring you joy every day and stay as mentally healthy as possible, because what we are up against is exhausting and is discouraging and it is daunting, but it will not fall until we push it. And history has shown that when we push, it does fall. So y'all take care of yourselves. And I mean that in a very real way. Love on the people around you when you can, if you can. Love on yourself if you can't. And we will see you next Saturday. Free.